a bit of background on me. In the back in the 90s, wrote the PC CD-ROM game Beasts and Pumpkins, published through EA. And moved on to do tools and editors for games, the HGDO, which was 2D and 3D tools. That was written in C Sharp with a C++ engine. And we did some other games, some reboots of Fighting Fantasy on the Kindle devices on EA screens with Ian Livingstone. That was kind of the turn to page, if you remember those books from the 80s. And then we moved more onto mobile apps and games, which we did a dinosaur snap game just to do a standalone one, which is the number one, I think, at the moment on the app stores. And then Wordborg is the game we did last year, moving more into the social area with the back end that you want from a social game, adding a little bit to the complexity. So just what I'm talking about today is just coming from our point of view as an indie. And maybe from where you are, if you've got graphics and gameplay skills covered, like we do, and you wanted the connected experience rather than a game that you just write once and send off. And limited budget, because obviously if you've got all the budget in the world, things are easy, but coming from an indie side, it's a little bit more tricky. So some of the problems that we looked at when we were trying to get on the latest technology was there was perhaps too much choice in architecture. All the different platforms, you've got the native, you've got the desktop web, you've got mobile web, different consoles now, television starting to have built-in capabilities. So it was pretty complicated to decide on a technology that would cover them all efficiently. And again, with the revenue model, you've got banner ads, interstitials, pay ads, free in-app purchases, do an action to get money, sponsorship from big companies, licensing, it just goes on and on really. So it's not an easy set of decisions. And then of course, the risk, how long is it going to be before it actually does make any money? Some projects, AAA, you can be talking several years, and indies again, maybe can't be spending too long. So some of the solutions that we looked at, previous games we've used Cocos 2DX to try and be cross-platform, which works really well. But now, interestingly, the HTML5 canvas being a real contender for major titles. So cloud server architecture, essentially, the way that we architect the game means that we can keep the cost down at the front, which I'll come on to later, add in multiplayer features without necessarily using the app stores, game centers, and scalability, of course, in case it does become, as we would hope, a big success. Oh, is it not? So, in terms of the community, we found it was really useful to start the community almost before you start any of the coding on the game. So engaging people before the alpha stage and describing the game to yourself in a way that might suit crowdfunding. Also the continuous engagement, so as we produced the game, we kept talking to the community, doing bug fixes, new features, and encouraging social groups by offering prizes to any groups that would be a fan of our game. So we just tried to create the community to help the community create itself. And then on the back end, by choosing essentially the stuff that you build big apps out of, but for the back end of a game, it means that we've got good reliability, so when people come to play the game, they're not going to find it's down, which gets frustration. And talking to the players as well, when you're doing an update, is there an update coming? So looking at HTML5 canvas, it's now pretty much, you're not going to have too much problems with people having it in their browsers. It's over 3 years on all of them. The mobile web views, that's for when you want to try and wrap it for each platform. So if you're running for iOS, Android, Windows Phone, you can essentially now be more guaranteed a good experience when you wrap your HTML5 up for native. If you want to wrap it for desktop, you also can do that if you need to publish on Steam, which is obviously a big platform on PC. And Node WebKit's very useful for doing that for your HTML5 app. Cordova, PhoneGap for mobile works really well, because you can write all the code that you want to do in the native that's specific to that platform
And then just keep the rest of it generic. So yeah, generally speaking with the cloud gaming, it's a good balance of speed and flexibility in HTML5. We use web APIs on the back, so we write a RESTful web API, just like you do for an application, which handles creation of users, submissions of scores, any other in-game activity, through the same API, which we can scale. And then, of course, you've got, with HTML5, you've got good standards now. Local storage isn't a problem. Audio, pixel and image manipulation all have standard APIs. And there's a heck of a lot of JavaScript libraries out there for things that you haven't got. So physics, QR codes, everything seems to have a library out there that somebody else might have done, which is, if licensed correctly, is really useful. And of course, with HTML5 Cloud, you've got the network condition covered. So people are used to being connected when they go on to moving around with their mobile device, and you've got to be able to handle that. And that's already well suited to this kind of architecture. But it's not all good on HTML5. It can be slower on some of the older web views, so you can normally cry when you get to Android 2.3 on an old device. It's definitely worth testing that, what your range of devices are going to be earlier on, and making sure that you're not trying to do anything beyond the capabilities of those early devices. Mobile web audio, that's not the web audio API, but just generally speaking, if you're on the mobile web, trying to play sounds is still pretty horrible. There are ways around it for different platforms. It's improving, but it's definitely, again, there could be some latency issues there, so it's worth checking your style of game against. And then, of course, if you're using wrappers, there's no actual standard at the moment, so you'll have to do different store implementations for different app stores. So that's something else just to bear in mind. So on the scalable hosting, we do use the web API in C# on Azure. It lets us do pretty much everything that we need to do in terms of the RESTful API with the response codes. It works really well for scalability. And the cloud-based SQL Server, so for things that don't change too much, that's what we use. So user accounts, anything that's not real-time gaming. And then things that you might want to be changing very frequently, we use the table storage and the NoSQL databases sometimes, like Mongo. And also, it's nice to get responsiveness of things that happen on the server. So you do need some kind of push capability, and we use SignalR for that, which has the fallback to long pole if WebSockets aren't available in the client browser. And then how we actually make any money out of all of this. The subscription model seems to work quite well with this style of game. Because it's a hosted game, people are happier about having to pay a subscription towards it, such as Club Penguin, Moshi Monsters. Those kind of games are a service that are available to you for that month, and therefore people are quite happy with paying for it on a monthly basis. And we found that a simple on-off membership was actually the most effective. We played with points, coins, all the different things, but we found it was, particularly for this title, it was actually much easier just to define a list of things you get as a member and things you get when you're not a member. The non-member one stays free, so you can always fall back to that and keep playing. But as a member, they get things like no adverts, a few different features, but nothing that's a pay to win, because that can annoy, obviously, other players. And then also we found that it was worth having an auto-renewing and a non-renewing option, because some people object to signing up for a subscription. So by having the option of monthly or pay for a year and it doesn't renew, worked really well. And we get about a 50-50 split between the two. And we were quite pleased that people were prepared to pay £9 for a year, which is obviously quite a lot of money for a mobile game. But compared to previous games, it's obviously not very much. But people were actually happy with those kind of numbers. So this is a quick demo of the simple game that it is. It's just being able to find letters in a board that you can rotate. So a bit like Boggle, but with a few extensions. And essentially people can try, everyone plays on the same board for a day. And so everyone around the world gets a chance to submit their best score for that particular board. So it's a global leaderboard, but it also integrates with Facebook to show how your friends have done on it. And see how you rank to them, along with stats to see how you rank to the rest of the world on particular days. So it's been very popular with Scrabble players, people that like to find particularly difficult words that, beyond me, quite how they do it, but they can get, you know, you can go beyond 15-letter words, because on Scrabble you're limited to one row, but on this you can go in any direction. So it's created quite a lot of interest in that community. But yes, it's just that architecture of that game is the front end's HTML5. It's desktop web. It runs inside Facebook on Facebook's canvas. It's mobile web. It's native. It wraps for the app stores on iOS, Android, Kindle, Fire, Windows. And that uses Cordova behind the scenes there. And it's Windows Azure, cloud services, the SQL database I talked about before. And so another key question is obviously how long these things take to write, but this was based on one developer. So in the first week, it started at the start of January 2014, we basically did the single player board, the layout, and some basic art, the developer art, this always needs to be replaced quickly. Then week two, we went just to friends and just a few test people on it, just to make sure things are going to be working without losing people's scores and so on. Final art came in week three, and we then released it to people that we might be interested without restriction. And then in week four, we actually had the basic game running as the first official release on desktop. The next month was more on the mobile and the tablet devices. A lot of time you have to take doing layout now, because as all the different screen densities, screen sizes, orientations of mobile devices, trying to get something, a UI that works on all those sizes, is probably the bulk of the work, I think, in some of these games now. And then we looked at the memberships in month three in the monetization side. And then, of course, the 4 to 10 was just feedback from the community, adding a few bits and bobs, some email templates done in MailChimp sent through Mandrill, and just trying to keep everybody engaged by doing, every week we'd send another email saying how they did and how their friends did, and comparing them, so that a personalized mail rather than just a generic one. So, if there's any faults in the system, people don't have the browser technology, we don't tend to get nearly any of these now, but we can just refer them to upgrade information for their browser they're on. And also, if you go on the mobile web, we tend to do a thing saying, did you know there's an app in the App Store? Take them straight to that app page if they're interested in that. And then on the Cordova wrappers, essentially, we've got access to all the native plugin source code. It means that you can see what's going on behind the scenes. If you need to make a change, if there's a problem with an App Store, something upgrades, Facebook are forever changing their API, means you don't have to rely on any other third parties to update. We have used some of the other tools like Trigger, Cocoon.js, but you are relying on them doing those updates with that process. But if you have Cordova, you can do all the updates yourself. So some actual figures for the amount we spend on our roles. It was initially just £9 a month for the web roles. When we run live, we figured it's about £37 a month for every 10,000 daily active users we have in terms of hosting. On the database, that's initially £3 a month. Yeah, so again, not very much, £20 approximately per 10,000 daily active users. And the email system, again, about £10 a month for every 10,000 daily active users. And then some actual facts and figures from our promotion costs. We put a story out with targeted advertising on Facebook. We found that to be the best of all the different advertising platforms. When we first did it, we were getting about 0.5% click-through. But by optimizing the way we displayed the story to make it of interest to someone and more conversational, we got that up to about 6.5% click-through rate, which gave us 12 pence per new player acquisition, which is pretty low compared to other mobile advertising routes. And of those, we found about 10% were happy to join the club, costing us about £1.20 per member, and then returning us £9 a year or £1 monthly on the gross for that. And we also found another nice benefit was that the desktop game players, because they were introduced to it through Facebook, they also drove us up the mobile charts, because they'd be told about the game on iOS, the game's on Android, they'd download that, so we don't have to go through the mobile's advertising routes, which are more expensive. So you can see here, this is our share of revenue, the club membership on desktop was way more than the advertising. People coming through Facebook were very happy to sign up through Facebook's payment system. And the advertising was not so big on that platform. But on mobile, advertising was the biggest one. I guess less people are willing to pay money on mobile, perhaps. And advertising is quite common there. So that was definitely our majority on mobile was through advertising. And then this is just how we managed to grow over the year. Initially, obviously, making a slight loss from the hosting costs, but the hosting costs in the darker colour there have stayed pretty static while the profits managed to go up above that month on month. So it's but given the small cost of the development, it works pretty well. So we've also found that we don't get a spike like we have done from our previous games that are focused on an app store position. So previously, you've got a tiny window. You're going to be in the spotlight for a short period of time. You might get featured, and then you disappear. Whereas with this approach, it's a much more continuous curve. It goes up not as quickly, maybe, at the start, but it builds solidly over time. And I think with the social gaming aspect, because you're keeping people interacting with each other and their friends, it naturally lasts a bit longer than just a standalone game that they might just sort of play and forget. And of course, it was quick, as you saw on the dev time there, to get it to market so we can do other games like this very quickly, see which ones are going to work, test ideas out quickly. And of course, if the revenue comes in quickly as well, that reduces the risk too. So it was important for us to get the monetization right. And another interesting one we found with this model as well was that we can build for crazy platforms. There just has to be some sort of Cordova support in there, but all sorts of platforms that wouldn't otherwise be cost effective to dev for. We can just reach those quickly just by doing another build with a simple lightweight wrapper, or even mobile web might just work for them straight away. And again, just trying to, it's really useful with a social app like this to look at the stats and to mine as many stats as you can about where users are coming from to try and get the growth up. So every day we've got analysis on that to see where people are coming from, how can we get people to engage more. And so, yes, that's a constant growth hacking approach where which you can do because of this model of not being a one-off launch. So Cordova in the future definitely looks good. It's actively maintained, plugins community, there's all sorts of plugins for different platforms. Hosting is coming down. It's always nice to see that on the emails that the prices normally drop. And web views, of course, with iOS 8, they've got the WK web view, which is really fast. They've got WebGL. So 3D is becoming really viable now as well. But yeah, for 2D games, it's definitely worth trying to see if you can get a decent frames per second on the minimum device. And then it does really make sense as a platform. So yeah, if you want to have a go on it, it's actually there on wordbog.com, which will give you the local device that it's available on if it's native. And I'm happy sort of to chat about cloud stuff on Twitter and my email there. So, and any other questions anyone might have now, I'm happy to answer.
What made you choose cloud services over websites?
It was nice to have the full server there in case we wanted to run other tasks. So we found that we had some libraries from previous projects that we like to use, and being able to have the flexibility to actually remote desktop to the server is really useful. So we can set up some other more complicated stuff that we might want to run.
Any other questions?
What would you say your capital outlay was?
In terms of WordBog?
Yeah.
I would say initially you needed about 5K to get it going. So.
Any other questions?
Honestly, I just want to make you drunk.
You used a phrase which has come up a couple of times today, this idea of pay to win. And it's something I'm a bit worried about because I think a lot of developers don't understand that players need to gain value out of the goods they get. And there's an assumption that if we buy things, that we'll then beat the game.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's wrong. That assumption that we can only make goods that are providing an advantage in play that will defeat the game, to me, is a misunderstanding. And I think the more we use the phrase play, pay to win, the more we're letting people get the wrong idea, I believe.
Mm.
So I'd rather focus us on building goods that are of value and remembering that pay to win means you've broken the game. Is that a fair assumption?
Absolutely. Yeah, I always try to do the analogy with a chess game where if you want to enhance your game, you might get a different chess board with nice pieces and a nice quality board, but you wouldn't have five queens at the start of the game, which is pay to win.
But actually, you know, why not have a game where you could choose to have extra knights versus rooks? And it wouldn't be chess, admittedly. Yeah. I'm not saying it's going to be chess. But if maybe I can exchange my total points value of my chess pieces, so maybe I start with five queens and you start with a standard chess set, and let's see what game that turns out to be.
I think it depends on the game and to whether, I mean, with our particular one, people being able to add extra letters would ruin the game. But and I think in a game like World of Tanks or something like that, you've got much more of a...
That's true, but why not have blanks? You know, one of the things about handicapping would be, you know, if you think about skill sets, I want to compete with you. I can't compete with you because I'm not at the same skill as you. Mm. But if I had a set of blanks which represented my handicap that I had to pay to have a pool of, and you know, I buy a booster pack of 10 of them, and it declares in my score, I use three blanks, would that really break the game?
I think it would be slightly confusing in our particular game.
Maybe.
But yeah, I think there's an interesting area.
The reason I go on about this, and I'm sorry if I bore about it, is that we think linearly as designers quite a lot. And actually, we have the opportunity to have multiple, you know, it might be that, it's very difficult with Scrabble kind of stuff, for want of a better phrase, kind of games, because there is an established set of rules we all understand.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we had, say, pink counters and blue counters, and the pink counters hitting certain colour square give you points, and the blue counter, but you could buy a power-up that would swap the colour of the counter you had, wouldn't necessarily break the game.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a pay-to-win. It would be a new strategy available to the player. And why aren't we thinking wider about how to introduce new strategies?
Hmm. Interesting point.
I think we should have a full debate about that afterwards. We didn't come here to
No, but I think it's also part of the process.
I love pay to win. I think pay to win is real life. I think if we want to go and have a car race now, I could buy a better, faster car than you, and
probably
ideally get there faster than you. But I don't think life is pay to win.
But would you start a game of Monopoly with a different amount of money to everyone else?
but you're talking about real life there. What about all the people that are they're richer than other people? That's what life is like. And as games designers living in this beautiful egalitarian you know, socialist lovely gaming world where we can create worlds, we tend to create egalitarian worlds, but the world isn't egalitarian.
I can see your point, because football clubs like Chelsea and so on.
Absolutely. Look at Manchester City, from nothing to winning the Premier League in 5 years. That's not any other reason than they spent tons of money.
Yeah.
You know, life is pay to win. That's my catchphrase, TM.
I'm just going to take it back to a very commercial point, actually. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just interested in the split in terms of revenue on the classic social game online and the mobile, and also which was the more lucrative, the profitable one?
I would say... Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that the Facebook side was definitely the most. The mobile tends to be now for us, this particular game, of course, it's only coming from this one, is convenience for people. So they already probably joined through Facebook and the desktop, and they then want to play on their mobile devices. So for us, supporting a lot was a good idea, because it just it's easy for us to build another one. Whereas if we were writing it from scratch on each mobile, you know, in Objective-C, probably wouldn't be a good idea. Yeah, exactly. It suits the market. So.
Any other questions?
I was just cutting in.
I mean, again, I'm just interested in learning more about the monetization of it because, so I've just downloaded it, so I will try it later for myself. So are you doing it that, are you finding that people are paying on the mobile version, but they're getting the credit for the game that they can use in any version?
Yeah.
Is it such a better payment system on mobile for you that it's worth giving Apple 30%?
It does work for us. I mean, we find it. It was tricky to get it right in the terms of to meet the App Store requirements. Obviously, you have to go through their store to get it to when it's on native, but on mobile web, you don't have to go through their store. But yeah, it was important to us to have it unlock on all devices as well, which is again a tricky one to get. But you are okay with that on Apple, on iOS and Android now. So long as you don't advertise another platform from within your app, you can unlock it once.
But you can advertise your WordBog account.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying. You get an account and you can log in.
Once you've unlocked the membership, yeah, on your user profile, it's on every device. So you're a full member features on whatever devices you load WordBog onto.
Yeah, yeah. Are you actually saying that in the iOS app, or is that? Are you allowed to say that at all? Or?
You're not allowed to direct them out, so they couldn't go into the Facebook way. So long as the only way they can join the club is through the App Store,
yeah,
then they get their 30%. It unlocks it on all platforms. And they are happy about it being unlocked, so long as you don't put in a method of unlocking it on iOS. So if you had a voucher system, for example, that wouldn't be allowed because you'd be on iOS and you'd be unlocking it, the club membership. But if your account is flagged as unlocked when it loads on iOS, they're okay with that.
And then you're just using that all through the cloud so that you can say we know which device we've got it on.
Yeah,
because
we grab the we make sure all accounts have an email address, which we grab through Facebook or on an email sign-up. So we don't use we make sure we've got that data. It's not going through the mobile stores, which obviously filter that. If you normally buy an app on iOS, you can get very limited data back from Apple about who that was.
It sounds like you were really happy with the way that the cloud stuff was working.
Yeah.
So that just seems like a no-brainer. You're going to do that for every game ever now.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. And people almost expect it as well. If their progress on one game, on one device, they expect their Candy Crush to be at the same spot.
Yeah, Lee mentioned it right at the start of the day, didn't he? And that's what I'm really keen on. I've been thinking about this for years. Every game that I ever make, I want to just log in on one device and be able to play on any other device that I can.
Yeah.
Any other questions? So, thank you, Chris.
Okay, no problem. Okay.